In just a moment, Generations with Kevin Swanson. But first, this. The World View in 5 minutes.
It's Wednesday, December 14th, 2016 AD. This is The World View in 5 minutes. I'm Adam McManus. Yemen, the country south of Saudi Arabia, is in economic crisis. A disasters emergency committee has launched an emergency appeal as millions starve, reports Christian Today. The war in Yemen has taken its toll after 20 months, and now more than 18 million people are suffering. Nearly three-quarters of the population is in urgent need of humanitarian assistance, and more than 7 million do not know where their next meal will come from. A U.S.-led coalition drone strike in Raqqa, Syria, killed three Islamic State fighters, two of whom helped facilitate the November 2015 terror attacks in Paris, the Pentagon announced yesterday. Psalm 94, 21-23 says, "The wicked band together against the righteous and condemn the innocent to death, but the Lord will repay them for their sins and destroy them for their wickedness. The Lord our God will destroy them." Christians have been rather pleased with President-elect Donald Trump's cabinet picks. Until now, Rex Tillerson, the man whom Trump has tapped for Secretary of State, not only led the charge to open the Boy Scouts to homosexual troop leaders, but his company, ExxonMobil, gives directly to Planned Parenthood, the largest abortion provider in America. Tony Perkins, president of Family Research Council, said that he's, quote, "tired of the State Department being used as a weapon in the global war on values. The last thing Americans need is a leader who would continue to advocate the leftist social policy of the Obama years," unquote. You can let Trump know how you feel at donaldjtrump.com/contact. Ohio Governor John Kasich has vetoed the heartbeat bill, which would have protected the child in the womb after a heartbeat is detected at the sixth week of gestation. The World View spoke with Janet Folger Porter, the founder of Faith to Action, who has been working on this bill in Ohio for 6 years.
Governor Kasich betrayed life. He broke his pro-life campaign promises, and he turned his back on 20,000 babies whose heartbeats can be heard. Despite all of this, the battle is not over. We are just two votes away from overriding his veto in the House, one vote away in the Senate, and it can be done. Governor Kasich's political career is over, but now we focus on those who want to have a future and are willing to override Kasich's betrayal and give babies with beating hearts a future. The message is, do not give up. This is doable. Just as Arkansas overrode their governor's veto of their heartbeat bill, so can we.
Porter explained to The World View that if just two members of the Ohio House switch their vote, it's possible to override the Kasich veto. She recommends that Christian pro-lifers across America call four members of the Ohio House who are most likely to switch their vote. But time is of essence. Call them ASAP, no matter the time of day or night, and leave a polite message urging them to override Kasich's veto of the heartbeat bill.
First is to Representative Arndt. His number, 614-644-6011. Representative Galvaron. Her number, 614-466-8104. Cheryl Grossman. Her number, 614-466-9690. And Representative Ann Gonzalez can be reached at 614-466-4847. Those are the people that we need to encourage and vote for a veto override so that babies with beating hearts can be protected by law. This is time for the God of the impossible to show himself strong once again. He gave us an impossible victory when the heartbeat bill passed the Ohio Senate, and we had an incredible victory by the Speaker of the Ohio House saying he will allow a veto override vote. We just need to get to 60, and we need two more to get there from the vote that was cast. This is not the fourth quarter. This is overtime. I would encourage you also to fast and pray. God is the one who says he sits in the heavens and laughs. He's able to empower this override, and we're going to go to him and ask him for him to overturn this horrendous betrayal of life. Call now and be a part of ending abortion.
You can get the names and numbers to call at the website Faith the number 2, action.org. That's faith, the number 2, action.org. If this bill becomes law, it would likely come before the Supreme Court, which, when filled with Trump's pro-life justices, could mean the overturning of Roe v. Wade, and thus the protection of all babies with a beating heart at the 6-week mark of gestation. If you take just 5 minutes today and make those 4 calls, would you please email me at adam@theworldview.com and let me know? 4 out of 10 evangelical Christians believe that doctors should be allowed to assist terminally ill patients in ending their lives, according to a new survey conducted by Lifeway Research, reports the Christian Post. Evangelical disability activist and quadriplegic Johnny Erickson Tada said last Thursday that the research shows that evangelicals, quote, have a basic fear about old age and pain and disability, but fears are not the basis for good social policy, unquote. Johnny explained that, quote, you don't have to have that extra surgery. You don't have to take chemo. If there's anything we should be focusing on, it should not be making it easier for people to die. Let's pull more resources into developing better pain management therapies, unquote. The release of Lifeway's survey comes after Colorado became the 6th state in the country to legalize physician-assisted suicide for terminally ill patients. Walt Disney, the original visionary, would not have been pleased. First, the Disney brand has championed and produced movies which feature nudity, profanity, and gratuitous violence for entertainment. And now, when a sanitizing streaming service called VidAngel.com strips movies of the objectionable nudity, profanity, and violence for $1 per movie, Disney sued. Sadly, a federal judge ruled in favor of the case filed by Disney and 21st Century Fox. VidAngel.com chief executive officer Neil Harmon said, quote, "We will aggressively pursue an appeal and take this case to a higher level where we have always believed we will ultimately prevail," unquote. VidAngel.com services are still operational as of yesterday. Christian brothers and sisters, let's have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. Ephesians 5:11. And that's The World View on this Wednesday, December 14th, in the year of our Lord, 2016. As we celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ this season, remember The World View in your Christmas giving. You can make a donation online at theworldview.com. I'm Adam McManus. Seize the day for Jesus Christ.
Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Radio Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, host with you today. It's Valentine's Day today.
Woo!
Yeah. My kids are doing a banquet for the couples in the church.
Hey, we're doing this. We're doing that with the couples in our homeschool group at our house on Saturday. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
Huge turnout last year.
My girls have been working on this for about 2 weeks.
Wow.
Oh, they got all kinds of decor. And, oh, they're having a good time with
it. I should come over here.
Yeah, it's going to be a great time. Well, it's Valentine's Day, and another point about Valentine's Day, guess what's coming out in the theaters tonight?
50 Shades
of Pink. 50 Shades of Black.
Black.
Yeah, 50 Shades of Black, I think it was. In which they attempt to define love, but they forget to appeal to 1 Corinthians 13.
Yeah, love American style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a show. In which the categories are blurred, and we did a show on that. We're not repeating it. However, it is interesting that 50 Shades has gone splat on Rotten Tomatoes.
Really?
Yeah. I just visited Rotten Tomatoes. I like to look at Rotten Tomatoes. It actually gives you a feel for what the audience out there, which I'm a mass audience, not Christian audience, but just the mass audience, thinks about the artistic presentation of the movie. And apparently it's gone splat, at least right now, it's gone splat on Rotten Tomatoes. Now, coincidentally, and again, this is an irony that I want to bring out, there is another movie coming out called Old Fashioned.
Yeah?
Do you know that?
No.
Yeah, another movie called Old Fashioned coming out, in which, here's the line on it, okay? In which, it's a love story, especially for Valentine's Day, and provides a contrast to 50 Shades of Grey. The Old Fashioned movie that's coming out tonight describes a story in which two broken people come out of their dark pasts of, you know, the 50 Shades of Grey destructive patterns.
Yeah.
So they're coming out of that. So they've been there, done that.
So it's
got a really dumb, lousy, horrible, wicked T-shirt.
So is this
that
a
didn't
sequel?
Do us any good. Yeah, it's sort of a sequel. Yeah. And they come back into real love through a traditional courtship. So I just think there's an irony there. And they make it through the whole film without fornicating. Wow. That's got to be a first. For a romantic movie.
Yeah. So what is it, 15 minutes long?
Wow. Break out the non-alcoholic champagne.
Wow. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
This is the first time.
So is this a Christian film then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. At least that's what they say. It does have a PG-13 rating for depiction of partying and sort of the bad old days. So they're coming out of the bad old days, but there's a depiction of the bad old days before they get to the good old days.
All right. But, yeah, sometimes they get a PG-13 rating because they actually mention Christ in a right way. You know, thematic problems. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not getting as much airplay.
I wonder why.
As in one thousandth of the airplay. Yeah. Very little airplay. I picked up a little bit of it on some of the Christian movie reviews out there. But and the Christian movie reviews, a little bit not sure because of the PG-13 rating.
Yeah.
So I haven't watched it, but I will say there's a contrast, friends, between the 50 Shades of Grey and Old Fashioned, in which two broken people come out of their dark pasts of 50 Shades of Grey. They're coming out of it. They've been there. Come out of it, and they're finding real love through a traditional courtship.
Okay.
So that's Valentine's Day 2015. Very interesting stuff. Now, I was at the grocery store. Yesterday, or the day before yesterday.
You don't have somebody else shop for you.
Going to Sprouts. Sprouts. Okay.
Yeah.
Sprouts is a great store, by the
yes,
way.
Yes, it is. I like that.
I like Sprouts. And here's People Magazine, right there. He's finally happy.
Obama?
No, Bruce Jenner.
Oh!
Bruce, there's the smiling face of Bruce Jenner. Not really quite looking like Bruce Jenner anymore.
How old is he now?
I don't know, 65? He's older, yeah. Bruce Jenner was the Olympian back in the... I remember him. He
Decathlon.
Won the gold medal for the decathlon.
Yeah.
Big, big guy. He was on the Wheaties box.
Wheaties box, yeah.
But
I thought he looked happy then.
Well, apparently he
wasn't. He had his hands up and all that.
He looked happy, yeah. He looked happy when he was up there getting the gold medal.
Yeah.
He wasn't happy.
He wasn't happy.
Well, he's finally happy.
Well, what made him so happy?
He's changing his gender.
And then... Did I hear that right?
I hate to break the bad news to Bruce, but
that's not going to make him happy.
Do it.
No, you won't be happy.
Nope, not going to be happy. Bruce Jenner's not going to be happy. It's kind of sad, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
You know, more violation of God's laws. You know, putting on a woman's clothing is an abomination in Scripture.
Yeah.
And arguing from the least lesser to the greater. I don't think we want to talk about what Bruce Jenner's doing, but.
Well, that even
I do want to say that
that even included that I did a study just on those words and the words in I think it's in Deuteronomy it said the things of a woman which also
so
made
it could include the accoutrements in other senses
right and so trying to take on the shape of a woman as well so even if you're just dressing in drag or something like that that was included.
May I suggest to Bruce that if Bruce wants to be happy, I've got a way for that to happen.
There's a big part of Scripture in there talking about happy.
Let me read.
Yeah.
Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Well, there you go, Steve. Now, that's not intuitive.
Right.
That's not intuitive. It's not the first thing Bruce thinks of. The poverty of spirit.
Yeah.
Meaning, a wretched man that I am.
Knowing that you're spiritually bankrupt.
Yeah. Meaning that God have mercy on me, a sinner. Meaning, the spiritual bankruptcy. If Bruce understood that what makes him unhappy are the things that he thinks are making him happy.
Right.
If his eyes were open to see the wretchedness of his condition, his sin before God, and that he is broken. He's very broken. We're all broken because of the fall. And we are spiritually impoverished. We're a mess. We are the very height of dysfunctionality. And if his eyes were open to that, and he had poverty of spirit, he would be blessed.
Yeah.
He'd be blessed. Blessed are they that mourn. If he would cry, he would be blessed.
Yeah, mourning is over your sin and recognizing how spiritually bankrupt we are and that we are sinners in the eyes of God who created us, and we need to mourn over our sinful life.
Blessed are the winners of gold medals. Oh, wait, wait.
Wait,
sorry.
Well, yeah, that was the...
That wasn't there. No. I'm sorry. I was reading the article flipped over the page there for a second. I'm sorry. Blessed are the meek.
Which would be the opposite of...
It'd be yeah, it wouldn't be the guy with his hands up going, I'm the
greatest.
I'm the greatest. Mm-hmm. Yep. Okay. Well, I just wanted to share a little bit. I don't think Bruce Jenner tunes into the show, but if he ever does,
yeah.
Or maybe he's got a friend, perhaps they should... point him to Matthew 5. Finally, before we take the break, Katy Perry did the Super Bowl thing.
Yeah.
And she said that God spoke to her before the Super Bowl performance.
She obviously didn't listen.
Or she forgot what he said.
Yeah, because I think if God spoke to her, he would have said, don't do it.
Don't do it. Stop. Stop now.
Yeah.
She said she did a lot of prayer and meditation. It's funny, I was praying, got a word from God. He said, you got this. I got you. I was on top of the line. A random guy just looked at me and, you know, you got this. And I was like, oh, this is God confirming I can do this. What?
She had a different God then.
What? That?
She wasn't listening to the God of the Bible.
God of this world.
Yeah.
Blind of the eyes of those who believe not, perhaps.
Right. That's...
The God of the Bible would not say, get out there and disobey me.
Right.
You get out there. And you sing the worst song that has been produced in the last 100 years that violates my law at every point and celebrates sin. The point needs to be made. And there's just a lot of Christians out there. Anytime you see God spoke to me, they're thinking, oh, she's very religious like the rest of us.
Right. But there are Lord's many and God's many.
Here's the point that also ought to be made. When God speaks, he doesn't speak apart from this.
Right.
And it could be the fact that she's been raised in a home in which God speaks sort of randomly to people. And he brings out all these new revelations all the time. And he kind of creates a new religion as he goes. That's the God of this world.
Right.
The God who speaks to us through the Word. And the final revelation of the Word comes through Jesus Christ.
Yeah. So do you think Katy Perry listens to this show?
I don't think so. But if she does,
or a friend,
heads up, get back to the Word of God. If God's going to speak to you, he's going to speak to you through his Word by his Spirit.
And he's not going to contradict his
Word. And she's got two strikes against her. This God, whoever spoke to her before the Super Bowl, didn't speak according to his Word and didn't speak by his Spirit. So two strikes. Two strikes. Okay. And you guys saw the Super Bowl.
Yeah. And we...
You skipped the part where Katy Perry was doing the...
Kiss the girl. Yeah. So as soon as she started singing that, we changed channel and waited a little while and went back. But I was... Yeah, the only thing that was impressive about it was the effects, the technical effects of it. I was not impressed with her at all. I've never seen her really sing anything before, mm-hmm. and I don't plan on ever seeing her sing anything again. My daughter, who takes voice lessons, was just appalled mm-hmm. that she really couldn't sing that well.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of...
I don't think you need to sing to be a pop singer today.
No.
You've got enough special effects and, you know, you've got enough technical know-how in the studio. You don't need to sing. You don't need to know how to sing. Yeah. You can lip sync.
Right.
You can lip sync. They could put all the electronics together and kind of make your voice work.
Wasn't that Millie Vanilli?
they could create a voice for you if they wanted to.
Yeah.
So, which I think
they do in studio for her because she sang live.
Yeah.
And so now we heard her live.
And I'm sure she's caught up in the machine. Friends, you need to read my book, The Tattooed Jesus, if you want to know the influence of the machine, of what the machine does, and how this pop culture is a self-destructive culture. And it doesn't present a biblical form of culture that's rooted in the Fifth Commandment and the First Commandment. Read my book, The Tattooed Jesus. If you have any contact whatsoever with pop culture, with movies, sports, popular music, if you've had any contact with AM and FM radio, if you have ever turned on the television, I would encourage you to get my book, The Tattooed Jesus, just to get a feel. Now, this is not the final word on culture at all. It's my best shot, and I haven't found too many resources on this issue. If there's more resources, that'd be helpful. But it's my best shot at bringing a Christian world and life view in the area of pop culture, and we are so surrounded by it, immersed in it, that I think somebody needs to say something about it. And if you have any contact whatsoever with pop culture and you're not critiquing it biblically, man, you better get a copy of my book, The Tattooed Jesus, and take a look at what I say about pop culture, about movies, music, etc. And if you'd like to interact with me, please do. We've had a couple of emails where people say, "Ah, you could have said this different, you could have said that different." I agree. I'm going to expand the book as I go. I'm going to edit it as we go. But it's my best shot at it. It's not the last word on culture because it was the most difficult book I ever wrote. Very complicated and difficult. It takes a lot of wisdom to plug worldview into the incarnation of culture. Very difficult. Extremely difficult. Am I completely happy with it? No, I'm not. But it's my best shot thus far, and there's not much out there to compete with me. So I would really encourage you to get a copy of my book, The Tattoo of Jesus. If you can't afford it, just email me. I'll get you a copy. It's only like 10 bucks. But get it at our website, kevinswanson.com. We'll be back in just a moment to analyze what's happening with the macro culture for women. It's a quartet for women that probably are the most influential, together the most influential force in our culture today. I'm going to summarize this in just a moment on the Generations Radio broadcast. Stay with me.
Loving parents want to give good gifts to their children. But how do you sort through all the worthless stuff out there to find fresh, engaging, and meaningful gifts? At Generations, we've been on the hunt for months gathering some of the finest new resources for children, young adults, and the entire family, including fun games, audio dramas, Christian biographies, historical fiction, short stories, and other exceptional family resources. And now we'd like to share them with you, along with a special discount. Until December 31st, get 10 to 45% off everything in our store. Go to generations.org/gifts to explore our top 8 gift ideas for the entire family. That's generations.org/gifts. Offer ends December 31st.
To the Generations broadcast, Kevin Swanson, your host, with you. Steve Vaughn also here in the studio with me. As we analyze culture and what's happening with the Western world and Western culture, we are looking at a post-Christian world, but how did we get here? That's the question I like to bring back again and again. Why is it that it appears the largest minority segment in America that fears persecution from the majority are evangelical Christians? Why is that the case? After 250 years of a country that at least gave some lip service to a Christian world and life view. What happened? What has happened to our world? Well, we have seen a breakout, a mainstreaming of paganism in our world in just the last 30 years. No, make that the last 15 years. Something really significant has happened in the mainstream in just the last 15 years. And it was accomplished by four women, a quartet of four women. And this, to me, is interesting. And I just want to share this with our listening audience. I wrote the book Apostate on what happened in the 19th century. Now we're analyzing what's going on in the 21st century as the ideas of the 19th century, of people like Marquis de Sade, Jean-Jacques Rousseau, Karl Marx, and others, are mainstreamed throughout our society. Friends, four women, with an amazing amount of influence. Now again, under the providence of God, not unlike the Nephilim prior to the flood, who had such incredible influence upon a society. There were giants. There were men of unprecedented power and influence over the masses. The same thing has happened over the last two centuries. And with the masses, it is happening right now under the influence of four women. Again, there are forces that have been working on these issues for the last several hundred years, since Jeremy Bentham, and some of the guys I talk about in my book. But most everybody does not know who Jeremy Bentham was.
That's right.
Very, very important man. Extremely important. He was the godfather of John Stuart Mill. And John Stuart Mill was incredibly powerful and influential in radicalizing the 19th century. All right, but that these guys were dealing in the higher echelons. Right now, we're moving into the grassroots. We're moving it into the mainstream. And what has happened with these four women is they have been able to popularize
and mainstream nihilist sexuality, cannibalism, drinking blood, homosexuality, witchcraft, and pagan gladiatorial games. That's what makes these women so interesting. They are, arguably, the most, if not among the most, powerful people in the world in terms of their influence upon pop culture. I speak of four women, the first of which we have mentioned on the show this week. The author of 50 Shades of Grey, E.L. James. She's 51 years of age. She actually describes herself as Twihard, and she says her books were notoriously inspired by Stephanie Meyer's vampire drama. She has single-handedly mainstreamed bondage, S&M, and what I would call nihilist sexual activity. If you want to take sexual activity to its ultimate nihilist goal, you want to take it over the edge to nihilism, self-destructiveness. E.L. James has accomplished that. Then Stephanie Meyer, of course, is number two. Her Twilight series. And by the way, E.L. James has sold about 100 million copies of her book.
Wow.
In something like 36 countries. Well, the second author, second woman in the quartet is Stephanie Meyer. And her Twilight series has sold over 100 million copies in 37 languages. They are teen vampire tales. One of the points that needs to be made is that this mainstreaming typically happens with your average housewife or your average teenage girl or your average teenage boy. It tends to work its way into the women and children. That may be why there are four women involved in mainstreaming these aspects of paganism.
Yeah, and these have become movies as well now.
They have. Yeah. Stephanie Meyer's Twilight series is something like number eight in the all-time motion picture series of all time.
Yeah.
Stephanie Meyer has popularized cannibalism and drinking blood. And if you want to see what the scriptures say about that, just read Acts 15. And there are several other references throughout the book of Acts. If you really want to go in the Old Testament, you can do the same thing.
Right.
But I like to stick to the New Testament when it comes to the grossest form of paganism. J.K. Rowling is my third woman on the list, and she has sold 450 million copies of Harry Potter in 67 languages, mainstreaming witchcraft and homosexuality. It is by far the most popular book series of all time.
Wow.
She is at the top. You look at the Wikipedia list of the all-time best-selling book series, you're going to find J.K. Rowling at the very top. She is number one, and she has secured the number two position as to the highest box office receipts in history for a franchise.
Right, so another movie series again.
She stands at $2.5 billion. Friends, these are not small people. You understand? These are not small people. These are big people. These are giants. These are orders of magnitude larger than, well,
the Beatles.
Stephen Kendrick.
Yeah.
Well, Stephen Kendrick.
Right.
Michael W. Smith.
Yeah.
Orders of magnitude above your average Christian author today.
Yeah.
Peretti. Somebody like that. They way, way, way. Talking hundreds of times more powerful, perhaps thousands of times more influential. J.K. Rowling, of course, has popularized witchcraft and homosexuality. Most recently, just a month ago, she finally came out of the closet. She had said Dumbledore was a homosexual.
Right.
She had said that in 2007, I believe, once she had accomplished 250 million copies of her book. But J.K. Rowling has finally admitted that there were LGBT students at Hogwarts. Came out in December and said that. And Dumbledore as well, which means she's doing her best to work towards the Greek form of the gymnasium and pedophilia.
Right.
That's where she's headed. You've got the teacher. Now you've got the students. It's homosexual fest. Harry Potter is a homosexual fest. She was successful at bringing homosexuality out of the closet for 13-year-old boys. And remember that... That's very important.
Yeah.
You got to do that if you are working your way towards paganism and leading the massive Christian apostasy in the West. So Suzanne Collins is the fourth in the list, and she, of course, is the author of the Hunger Games trilogy that has sold 26 million copies in 26 languages, and she has popularized the pagan gladiatorial games, bringing them back, something that I think some of the Christian fathers hoped were gone forever, but they are back. It's interesting that J.K. Rowling is an Anglican, now I believe attending a Church of Scotland. Meyer is a Mormon. James, not sure. Some think just a secularist. And Collins was a Catholic. For the most part, they come from Christian or Catholic backgrounds. But Erica, Stephanie, Joanne, and Suzanne will certainly go down into history as the great deconstructionists of the Western world. These four women have, in a singular manner, managed to popularize paganism and take it mainstream.
Yeah, and you know it's mainstream when they make them all into movies.
Yeah.
And the movies
and
do really well.
That's happened one by one. J.K. Rowling, number two. Box office receipts in the history of motion pictures. Suzanne Collins, Hunger Games. That's pretty much been the biggest film of 2014. And we have done our due critique of some of those movies as they've come out. Stephanie Meyer's Twilight series, the same thing. And finally, this year, Fifty Shades of Grey has managed to take the more nihilistic form of sexuality and taken it mainstream. All right, my friends, now, I want you to contrast for a moment the 21st century with the 18th century.
So the 1700s.
So let's get back to the 1700s, and let's think about, I just did this last night, I was thinking, okay, now who were the greatest authors of all time in the 1700s, writing on homosexuality, drinking blood, vampirism, the great writers, I mean the most popular ones. And I know that the most popular writer in the Northeast, we're talking in New England, in the latter part of the 1600s, early part of the 1700s, was Increase Mather and his sermons.
Really?
Yeah, Increase Mather was the most well-known writer in America in the 1690s and the early 1700s. So think about it. We're talking about best sellers in the 1700s. Increase Mather, a very powerful Puritan preacher.
Increase, that is amazing.
Now, would you say there is a difference between Increase Mather and Stephanie Meyer?
Yeah.
It'd be a bit of a move.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a move. Jonathan Edwards, huge writer.
Yeah.
Very important. Probably the most well-known American author of the 1700s. Yeah, I would say bar none.
And
you're not going to find anybody more well-known in America than Jonathan Edwards.
And he seemed to spit out books and things really quickly.
Jonathan Edwards versus Erica James in 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah. I think a little bit of a difference.
A bit of a difference. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we're talking about bestsellers of the 1700s. John Fox. Fox's Book of Martyrs. John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress. The two books owned by almost every American.
Yeah.
In the 1700s. John Fox's book. Now, John Fox's Book of Martyrs versus, let's say, Collins' Hunger Games and the gladiatorial games. Oh, wait a minute. It was Christians who were jumping into the games or tossed into the games knowing their best to stop the games.
Right.
Even at the loss of their own lives.
Yeah.
That's what the Christians were busy doing. Yeah, John Fox wrote about that. Yep. So there's a slight difference in John Fox and Suzanne Collins. I would say world's difference. I would say darkness and light, good and evil, Christian and pagan. Woo! Huge differences. Unbelievable differences. So, big sellers in the 1700s, friends. Jonathan Edwards, Increase Mather, John Milton, John Bunyan, John Fox, Philip Doddridge.
Mm-hmm.
Philip Doddridge is huge. If you don't know his name, he was huge in the 1700s. Daniel Defoe and Robinson Crusoe. Okay, all solid Christians. All Puritans, people were running out to buy their books. These were the books on their shelves. This was before cannibalism, witchcraft, pagan gladiatorial games, nihilist sexuality, homosexuality came into the Western world. That was before that happened.
Yeah.
But now, here's the next question. How do you get from Jonathan Edwards and John Fox back into godless gymnasiums and pagan coliseums?
There's got to be some education
going
on.
You've got to go to the 1800s.
Yeah.
How do you get from the 1700s to the 21st century? How do you get there? You got to get
through, the 1800s.
Century, 1800s. So, and that is where I would like to present a book called Apostate, The Men Who Destroyed the Christian West. Apostate, The Men Who Destroyed the Christian West. Be sure to get the book and get it for all your friends. Get it for anybody who's interested in pop culture. Anybody who's slightly interested in Suzanne Collins, Rowling, Meyer, James, get the book Apostate for any Christian left who wants to know the story of how it happened. Right, friends. Turns out, the only way you can get there is by way of a massive philosophical and academic shift in the minds of men in the 1800s and 1900s. Now, if you want to name some authors that popularized an anti-Christian philosophy in the academy, the guys who inspired the turnaround, the guys behind the turnaround, before all hell broke loose on Western society, before that happened, who was pressing the gates open? The virtual giants, the extreme Nephilim of the 19th century include people like Jean-Jacques Rousseau and Marquis de Sade. Marquis de Sade, obviously the parent of E.L. James. Obvious. I made that point in the show last week. Marquis de Sade, huge philosopher in the area of sadism. Where the word sadism comes from. Jeremy Bentham, huge. You don't know who Jeremy Bentham was, writing the most edgy book of the latter part of the 1700s, early part of the 1800s. Jeremy Bentham is the father of modern sexuality and homosexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to know something of this man. Emerson, Hawthorne, Mark Twain, all of them outstanding apostates in some of the most spectacular terms. And influenced by demons. And I do believe that guys like Mark Twain, Karl Marx, and Friedrich Nietzsche were influenced by Satan himself.
Yeah, especially with some of this last stuff that Mark Twain wrote.
Yeah, he wrote the letters to the earth. And
right.
Letters penned from Satan to the archangels. And, you know, he was serious about it.
Mm-hmm.
He was serious about it. He wasn't kidding around. He was effectively talking about how important it would be to mainstream adultery. It was huge for him.
Yeah.
Now, he warned his daughter, don't you dare publish that book. It wasn't published until the 1960s. During the sexual revolution, at the point at which people could accept it. But Mark Twain is very much, very important why, the most influential American author ever, at least upon the last 200 years. Jonathan Edwards was the most influential author in the 1700s. But by the time you get to the 1800s, 1900s, the most popular author of all time, according to American schools, high schools, and colleges, was Mark Twain. Okay, I talk about the incredible influence of these powerful men that did their best to turn the tide on the Western world. Friends, read the story in this book, Apostate. Well, today we have new apostates, very powerful women who are being used to mainstream the ideas. But the men who are used to create the apostasy at the highest levels of academy, philosophy, leadership, et cetera, were covered in my book, Apostate, The Men Who Destroyed the Christian West. There should be mockers in the last time.
Mm-hmm.
So this is no surprise, Steve. I would take the term last times. I know there's a lot of debate on eschatology. But I think that we all should agree that the last times, at the very least, apply to the times at which Jude wrote all the way to the end of the world.
Right.
I think it's fair to say that much. Whether or not it specifically applies, especially to right now, I'm not saying that much. But I say if Jude wrote it, if it's in the Word of God, then we can apply it. And Jude spends the entire book, except for the last 4 to 5 verses, on this issue. Effectively, I should put the book of Jude in the appendix of my book, Apostate, because we're listening. There should be mockers in the last time who should walk after their own ungodly lusts. And they be they who separate themselves, sensual, having not the Spirit. But you, beloved, build up yourselves on your most holy faith, praying in the Holy Ghost. Keep yourselves in the love of God. Some have compassions. Others save with fear, pulling, yanking them out of the fire. I think that's what we do on the show. We have compassion, we're tender, and then sometimes we use the shock treatment, the paddle treatment. We got to do that in the midst of an apostate age. And that's what I'm trying to do with my book. The story of these apostates, their impact upon the world, is clearly staggering, friends. But they rage like waves of the sea. They're living out their own shame, to whom is reserved the blackness of darkness forever. That is, they burn out quickly. And that's the story of these apostates. That's how I end the book as well. Get my book, Apostate, at our website, kevinswanson.com, and be sure to get copies of any young person who's working their way into the mass culture or working their way into the academy, the university. If they're involved in any liberal arts classes, be sure to get them a copy of my book, The Men Who Destroyed the Christian Bus, available at our website, kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson, inviting you back again next time. We continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.